This is CliffCentral.com.
It's time for Justice Malala to give us the latest in the burning platform, brought to you by Nando's. Morning, Justice.
Good morning, guys.
How are you?
It's all good. It's all good. It's a week full of protest, full of sound and fury and anger and all sorts of other things. But
and how?
I don't know if you guys saw the front page pictures in lots of the newspapers and other media. But, you know, the fees must fall certainly dominates. And there's a lot going on there. So I suspect that we are in for, you know, it's so funny. Time flies. You remember sitting here last year talking about how this is not going to go away. And here we are looking at these images. And
it hasn't gone away.
It hasn't gone away. But for me, one of the biggest problems with what's going on now is that 1 year later, 1 year after the same students marched on the union buildings and we said, you know what, 0% fee increase for 2016, there doesn't seem to be a plan at all. It's like, oh, no, we'll let the vice chancellors decide how much the increase will be.
Aren't there two things going on here? First of all, they're setting Blade up to fail because Blade is an inconvenience now.
Yeah, there is an element of truth to that. But I think Blade could have taken a little bit more responsibility.
No, why? Because if he can make it the university's problem, he doesn't have to get the blame.
But he should have known that this is going to blow up, and it's blowing up. So are you setting up Max Price to fail at UCT, or Jonathan Janssen or Adam Habib at Wits?
It's called collective responsibility, the way of the future.
But here, for me, it's a failure of leadership. There should have been someone in government, certainly from the presidency, maybe Jeff Radebe or one of the other of our 34 member cabinet, who should have said, guys, we need to find a way that says we are on this issue, and this is how, in the interim, we handle it. Look at... you know, the ANC came out, and the ANC statement was interesting. After the August 3 election, the ANC sat, and there was a curious line in that statement. It said, no, for now, government must not increase student fees. So 0% increase for 2017. At the time, many of us, and I'm one of those, said, why is the ANC suddenly trying to appease the students and so forth and so forth? And perhaps it was because, you know, the ANC has taken a beating and da-da-da-da-da-da. But one of the things about that statement was that it said, until we've got a final solution and a final proposal on the table, don't fiddle with this thing, trying to get to this, trying to get that. Now, I don't think that any of the university or the fiscus, in fact, treasury could afford a 0% fee increase. However, there was no plan on the table about what happens when Blade goes and announces that Adam Habib has to sort himself out, Mabizela at Rhodes has to sort himself out, and now you've got this big blow up. That's happening now. So I do think that we failed to plan, and failing to plan has led to this fire that you're seeing on campuses across the country.
Well, it's not going anywhere, and this is something we predicted, but Blade really should have taken some responsibility here too. And obviously he's in an invidious position because he's in the SACP, which has been very critical of the president. Mm. Blade used to be the president's lapdog and ally, and now he is the president's enemy. He's losing support.
There's a lovely list that's doing the rounds about who's going to get the chop, and Blade is number one on that list, and he's been number one for a few months. And so you saw that press conference two and a half weeks ago, when the SACP, after its Central Executive Committee meeting, came out, and there were people essentially who are in Jacob Zuma's cabinet saying, we're going to be fired. And it was Blade, it was Rob Davis, it was Jeremy Cronin, it was Tulas Ngesi. Basically, everyone who's a communist was going to be fired. So he's in a terribly weak position as well. But, you know, I think he has to take personal responsibility as well. I think what he did was that word? Quisling. What's quisling?
Isn't that a person who, a sycophant, who wrings their hands and does whatever is required to hold on to their master's favor? And it's like a slave who does everything the master asks.
I thought his decision was a quisling decision. I'm not using the word properly. But he could have said, as a government, this is our position. And I want to go back to this thing. Actually, I'm actually quite cross. If you're a leader, you can't just like say, no, oh, it's not my fault. The vice chancellors have to announce, but they can't announce more than 8%. You know, Jacob Zuma, last year, the students march on the union buildings. He has a meeting with them in his big, large boardroom. They come out of there and he says, I'm telling all the universities, all the vice chancellors, that it's a 0% fee increase for 2016. Yeah. We know 1 year later that the issue is still live, it's still hot, it's still burning. And what does government do? No. Now you've got to the vice chancellors have to deal with this themselves. It's absolutely outrageous and I don't agree with it. Secondly, I just think we need to talk about, you know, I played in Zimanda. I think on this one he's just divided.
But there are a lot of people in the cabinet who are suddenly starting to look insecure. It's a bit of a shot across the bows that Nomcobo Djiba has been disbarred. That certain other Zuma allies are finding themselves in that cold, dark place. I mentioned to Mabane and Ben, I saw Dudu Mieni outside Parliament on Tuesday.
I hope you went and said hello.
I did. I went over and said hello.
She was 1 hour, 20 minutes late.
Yeah, shame. And she was waiting outside for a taxi to go home. She looked like she wanted to throw herself into traffic.
Oh, dear.
Yeah.
Okay.
She had a tough day.
Yeah, okay. Just a tough day.
I feel like a lot of the Zuma people are starting to see the writing on the wall, even if he isn't. And they're starting to understand the magnitude of what price you pay for being loyal to him. And there is a price.
There is a big price. Can I just say finally, can we just talk about violence, guys? I mean, I know that this is a just cause around the fees must fall, okay? Mm-hmm. It's a just cause. People, you know, people want education. My view is that those of us who can afford to pay must pay. But the violence, there is nothing to justify this. And young people at universities protest all over the world. But the violence we're seeing is just not right. And the burning of libraries, I know, you know, the University of KwaZulu-Natal, UKZN, brought out a statement after that library was burned saying, oh, we are okay because, you know, we can find the books and the books, others of the books were in other parts of the library. So it wasn't too bad that, 100-year-old documents were burned down and all that. That is rubbish. That is
any place that burns books is just evil.
Disgusting. And let's put it on the table. There is an element of the EFF student command. There's an element of the Pan-Africanist student movement at WITS particularly, who are essentially violent, who want to bring down the system, not get a 0% fee increase or no fees for studying at university. And I think government, academics, society needs to say, not in our name. Not in our name. So I see a lot of people and a lot of academics going around saying, this is a just cause and anything is justified. Nothing is justified. This is a democratic country. If you don't like what the ANC has done around education and free education, surely 2019 is around the corner. Go and vote them out and give us someone who will give you free education. EFF maybe, or the DA maybe, whoever it is.
I saw people getting hot under the collar yesterday when apparently Gwede Mantashe said if it had been up to him, he would shut down all universities for like 6 months just so that these kids can learn a lesson. I mean, that's not productive either, right? That's
not a solution. That's the lack of leadership we're talking about. Again, I mean, who's that going to help? How is that going to help? How does this work that a leader of the African National Congress can say, I'm going to shut down universities for 6 months? Imagine what it means for skills. So if you shut down universities for 6 months, you don't have engineers coming out in the period that you're expecting. You don't have people coming into the workforce. And what does that do to economic growth? I mean, it's such a daft. It's politicians at their worst. And this, what was he thinking? No.
But also we had a caller yesterday who's in their final year of medicine, and they said, if those medical graduates don't graduate, there are no interns in hospital.
Exactly.
And if there are no interns in hospital, all the students who are protesting's parents who go to public hospitals won't get the care they need.
Exactly. So, I mean, the idea that you go and you just say, I would shut them down, it's exactly, you know, that line, Mabale, it's so unfortunate. It's exactly what Jacob Zuma said the other month when he said, give me 6 months as a dictator, I'll sort this place out. I mean, it's exactly that kind of sentiment that you're in a democratic space. You can come up with solutions and implement them in a democratic country. Instead, you're hankering after, I wish I was a dictator. Oh, I could do this if I could just... Blah. I mean, those instincts are very dangerous. But
Justice, there's also an argument to be made that if you are a student attending a tertiary institution, you are in the top 3% of the population anyway in terms of privilege. Now, despite the fact that many of these students have parents who can't afford to put them through, or who have scraped and bowed and begged and stolen whatever they could in order to get their kids to that point, the students themselves who are protesting do not care about anyone except themselves. They don't care about the students who do want to get on with lectures. They don't care about the lecturers. They don't care about people who visit the campus. Someone I know, his wife was visiting the campus to collect something. She was very nearly accosted and attacked assaulted by these people. And she was just there to collect something.
That's why I try to make the distinction. I don't think all students at WITS, there are huge amounts of numbers that show exactly how many students are enrolled at WITS, how many are on campus on a daily basis, and what they do. I think the one point I'll agree with Blade on, and I'm not a conspiracy, I don't believe in conspiracies much. I don't buy into them. But there is a small, violent seam of students who are responsible for some of the extremely violent scenes we've seen. And here again, I say, this is a democracy. This is an open space. Why is it when we saw the same thing at CPUT, and I don't know if you guys remember the images from UWC, CPUT last year, mm-hmm. They were absolutely horrific. People burning, UWC, I think, suffered about 350 million, 300 million rands worth of damage. It was terrible. Who has been prosecuted? How has an example been made that you can protest as much as you like, but you cannot be this violent? And so you're absolutely right. Many of those students who are responsible for the violence, are really out of line, and someone has to act. And acts of leadership involve painful acts of saying, where are the law enforcement agencies to make sure that those who don't want to protest, and there are many, continue with their lives? I think this is a failure of leadership. It's a failure of upholding the laws that you have.
Mm-hmm. But Justice, the students' concerns, as far as I can tell, is the way in which they are being handled or manhandled by law enforcement. So for them, it's more about the fact that they feel they're being mistreated by police or security forces when they're protesting.
No, and that is wrong. People should protest, and they shouldn't feel that if I go out on the street today and want to protest about the high cost of data, that I'm going to be beaten up by the cops. That is anti-democratic. That I stop and say, oh, they'll kill me, or they'll shoot me, or they'll beat me up. That shouldn't happen in this democracy in particular, in any democracy anywhere in the world. And I think the students absolutely have a right to do that. For me, it's when essentially acts are carried out to stop people from participating in their daily lives. And when the police try to stop that, the pushback becomes even more violent, and then it spirals into what we're seeing on the street. I do think that the police are scared and don't know how to handle riot situations. I think our police have been, are denuded of experience and training.
And there's no leadership there either.
And there's no leadership.
Because a leader would be able to say to them, guys, hold back here, or go for it.
Yeah, we are going into this for this reason. Not, oh yeah, we are here and we'll show you because we've got, you know, riot gear and so forth and so forth. I think that exacerbates the situation. It makes it way worse than it should be. So I think our policing in South Africa has a big problem. And one of those problems is that we've got people essentially being sent into volatile areas, whether it's a protest in Deep Sloot or a university situation like Wits, where, you know, they don't even have experience of how to make sure that protesting people stay within the bounds of what the protest is about. And it's a free for all.
Just, can we touch on NSFAS quickly?
Yes, NSFAS. I mean, guys, we need to talk about the fact that there's huge amounts of numbers about NSFAS that show that many of us have gone to university and been recipients of NSFAS loans, and we don't pay back. It needs, if people listening to this show do not pay back their loans, then what happens to the kids who will have to get those loans now?
Well,
because that is a big problem.
We're not replenishing. This is the whole argument that nothing is for free.
Nothing is for free. And I think that, firstly, that needs to go. But we can't keep on saying we want free education when those those of us who might have received in some way or other loans from the state, there's a sense of responsibility that has all of us as citizens we have to take.
I'm saying that these people who are protesting, while they may have very legitimate claims, their behavior would indicate that their interest is completely narrow and self-centered.
No, I agree with some of what you say, not all of it. But if any of them get an NSFAS loan, it's not a scholarship, it's a loan. Now, it's a loan we essentially, as a state, as a people, saying, I'm investing in Mabale because I know that she's going to be a valid member of society and she will pay when she graduates.
Mm-hmm.
She goes, she gets a job, but she doesn't feel she has to pay. She spends 5 years on the job, gets promoted, starts earning 600, 5, 1 million, whatever she's earning, and she still doesn't pay.
Mm-hmm.
Imagine if you went and bought a car and said, oh, I'm not paying. But we don't do that. And so at an ethical level, the huge number of South Africans who have received state loans, I'm not even talking about people, state loans,
uh-huh,
and are not paying them back. We need to, at an ethical level, we have to ask ourselves, if I'm not paying back that money, how dare I say Jacob Zuma must pay back the money?
I need to understand why it is that people are not paying back this money. Because if I'm paying off a car, I don't have a choice. That money gets debited from my account every month. Standard. It happens. I don't have a say in it.
Mm-hmm.
So how is it that NSFAS is not able to get this money back from the students that it loaned it to?
Pay back the money.
Because the biggest problem is that NSFAS was run by government, by those responsible, almost as a charity instead of a financial institution. Because at the end of the day, I'll tell you, there's private businesses which have funded lots and lots of middle-class, working-class people. A business like EduLoan, for example, where parents would say, Mabale needs to go to university, I don't have enough money, I'm going to take a loan, and the parents pay back. Now, with NSFAS, it's you, the 18, 20-year-old saying, look, I will, when I graduate, do this. And government and NSFAS as an institution did not say, we are going to follow you and make sure that this happens, so that you don't actually have to agonize about this. It's just part of your responsibilities. But we didn't do it. So it wasn't an efficient machine. Sizwe Ngasana, who used to be the head of First Rand and FNB, all that group of businesses, has gone there of his own volition. He's a multi-millionaire. But he said, I'm going to help by making sure that we fix this thing and make it into a proper bank, so that you can be followed up. You will pay. And I wish him luck. I really wish him luck. I think he's a guy we should have on the show and just talk about, man, you know, what are you doing to get that money back? There are billions of outstanding. And people just feel like, no, if I can get away with it, I will get away with it. And they're getting away with it.
Well, here's Roscoe. He says, it took me almost 4 years to pay back my NSFAS loan, because I couldn't afford my education. I was broke to pay it off, but I did it.
Yep, and that's proper. That's a South African doing what needs to be done. We need more like that. But Gareth, you wanted to talk about all President Zuma's allies.
All his allies, all his quislings.
All his quislings.
And particularly in the light of Sibanye Gold's Neil Frohneman's comments, which follow on the comments of Sipho Phuthiana from Anglo Gold Ashanti, the mining businesses, who have always been very careful not to get involved in politics because they walk this very fine line between unions and the ministry and the president. And there seems to be a lot of activity in mining at the moment, particularly from the Guptas. So maybe there's a sea change happening there too, when two leaders of two major mining companies speak out so openly against the president.
It hasn't been a great week for, how shall I say, Zuma appointees. At the SABC, Saudi Mutsuning now. What's he? Can someone help me? He's going into the office today, right?
I don't know.
And on what salary scale? What's his job?
Apparently, he's going back to be a cameraman, because he actually said, "I'll take whatever job you think is." It's so sad.
Is this so humiliating? It's also, the law says, guy, you're not the right person. The public protector says this. You fight, you lose every single battle. I mean, I sometimes stop and say, all these people who rush to Zola Majavu to represent them, the guy must be thinking, what's wrong with me? I get all the rubbish cases, because last week he lost in the Nomgcobo Jiwa case. He represents them and they have no case, and he's got to work with nothing. Anyway, Saudi's out of a job. Nomgcobo Jiwa and Mhwebi at NPA out of a job. Yesterday we saw the Minister of Police rushing to Parliament saying, oops, I'm sorry, I didn't follow the law on banning Glameza. I didn't inform Parliament. And so that makes the appointment actually null and void unless Parliament says, okay, we forgive you and we let it go. At SAA, we're talking about Dudu Mieni. I mean, Dudu Mieni, last week she said 4.6 billion rand loss at SAA. And then this week it's, oops, oh, I forgot about a billion. So it's 5.7 now. What? How do you lose a billion? Come on, help me. How do you lose a billion?
I tried to once, but I came out well short.
And also arriving so late for her appointment with Parliament, she's clearly accountable to nobody.
80 minutes late. 80 minutes late for your own presentation. Poor Deputy Finance Minister Mkhwebisi Jonas had to make the presentation. 80 minutes late. You were in Parliament this week.
We saw her.
Were you on time?
I was on time.
Oh, you were on time, exactly. It's your presentation. You've got to be on time, but no. Anyway, so all these people are in big trouble.
In the Burning and Tlemeza case, do you think someone suddenly went, oh, goodness, we didn't do this properly, we better hurry up and fix it before it's too late?
I think someone said, uh-oh, the opposition's going to find this and you will be in big, big trouble. It's a big loophole that you... Essentially, it's like saying, You know what? We're gonna ask Michael Flax over there to come into studio, but we're not gonna tell the big boss and you know, and he's just there and 1 year down the line say, oh, you've been paying this guy. You didn't even give him the letter of promotion and all this and all this, and it's a problem. So essentially, he hasn't been appointed.
It's very, very bad. Look, basically for Team Zuma, it's not a good time.
Team Zuma has been taking a big, big hit, and it's not a good time. So, just to conclude on your on the issues you raised about the mining companies, I think Team Zuma is taking in the public space is taking a beating. But our listeners should really be aware that between ANC conferences, so between Mangaung in December 2012 and the conference in December 2017, no one can get rid of the president except the National Executive Committee of the ANC.
Yeah, so the rest of us, our opinions do not matter.
Our opinions are nice, they're so nice, but at the end of the day, the ANC members in December next year will have the final say. They can get rid of the president. They can keep him. It's up to them. Democracy is good and proper. And so that's what it is. So the NEC of the ANC has a big meeting, I think, towards the end of this month. And my view is that President Zuma is still in charge in that NEC. And I think, you know, Neil Froneman, Sipho Pichana, all these people speaking, they are not on that NEC, and I don't think the pressure is big enough to get rid of him just yet.
So here's Jocelyn. She says, this is a quote from a Stellenbosch student. I must ask and clarify to all those defending the Fees Must Fall campaign. Number one, it is taxpayers' money that pays for everything, not government's money, as the only money government gets is from taxes. Number two, if you get all your degrees for free, then I must assume that your services when you qualify will be for free. Yes, no? How can you charge the public for your professional services when the public has paid for your education?
I hear that argument. You know, it's a complex problem. It's about what does society need to do to get to a better place? And the thing is that we have competing interests. My view is that we need free education is a noble thing that we should aim for. In the world today, there's only one country that actually provides free tertiary education, and that's Germany.
And they do have a very powerful economy.
They have a very, very
strong economy.
They don't
have 20-30% unemployment.
36%.
36. I was being conservative. They don't have a weakening tax base rather than a broadening one.
Exactly. So we need to be careful about all these calls for free education. For me, if a smart young kid in Mahikeng or Botshabelo or wherever, if that smart young kid can get into university, whether through NSFAS, whether through a scholarship from Anglo Gold Ashanti or whoever, if we can make sure that we don't lose that talent and people who are deserving can have a chance, whether they take a loan, whether if we can get them access to these centers of higher learning, I think then we'll have succeeded. We talk about these free education as if you know it's open to everyone. It's not always open to everyone, and so I think for me the issue of access and widening access for everyone, so that it shouldn't be that I'm rich that my kids can go to university. It should be that they have the talent, and everyone who has the talent anywhere in South Africa can get to the same. But we're not talking enough about that. So if you're in Vuani this year, you are in Matric, and you are a maths genius, we don't talk about the fact that you probably missed 2 or 3 months of schooling and you won't be able to pass your matric properly with an A in maths. So you won't get into the engineering department at UCT. Mm. That's access for me. So we can talk about free education. But so long as we're not giving the kid in Vuwani the chance that the kid in Parkhurst has, then, you know, we can talk until the cows come home, but it's not going anywhere.
Thank you, Justice. Justice Malala, The Burning Platform, every Thursday on Touch Central and CliffCentral.com.
This is CliffCentral.com.